Welcome to WJR's Internet Advisor Podcast. Catch the live show weekends on News Talk 760 WJR and online at InternetAdvisor.net. Now, here are your hosts.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Well, that's right. This is Gary Baker, and we're the Internet Advisor Show here with Ed Riddell, Cal Carson, and Rick Broida. Rick, it's great to have you here. You're our gadget guy. You show up once a month, and this is it. We got a lot of gadgets to talk about this week.
I'm here. I love it. Thank you
all
for
right.
having me.
Welcome. And Cal, Ed, are we ready to jump right into our show after this? Well, Foster Brown's on vacation this week. This is Gary Baker with Ed Riddell, Cal Carson, and Rick Broida. And Rick's our gadget guy. And let me guess, we're going to talk about gadgets this week?
You know, I really sort of prefer Gadget Man.
Gadget
Can we go with
Man.
Gadget Man?
Instead of Gadget Boy?
Yeah, you know, yeah. This Halloween season, I'm looking for my alter ego. Call me Gadget Man.
All right. It sounds like, you know, we should add you to our superhero list or something. and we really do need a superhero, Ed, because there's lots of new gadgets coming out.
Well, that's why Rick's here. And to tell you the truth, I didn't even look through the, you know, what the itinerary is today. So I'm going to wing it.
You are. Well,
you know, that's what we do best.
You're a model of preparation.
When Foster's here, you and I kind of wink at each other and go, okay, we're going to wing this one once in a while, right? So it happens. Cal, you ready to talk gadgets?
Yes.
God, is Cal ready to talk gadgets? He's got two laptops and an iPad sitting in front of him, splayed out like
Oh, yeah,
will you marry me, Cal? Honestly, look at you.
He has a utility belt on.
We better take that one offline here.
He has an Android, an iPhone, and a BlackBerry strapped on his utility belt, too.
No Androids.
No Androids. Oh, yeah, not Cal.
Null and void on the droid, that's for sure.
But you've got to be buzzing a little bit this week, and we won't call you Apple Boy. We'll certainly call you our Mac Man. Apple is coming out with an iPad. At least that's the rumor, the iPad Mini.
Yeah, let's all keep it to the rumor stage, because I don't want to be sitting here saying, yeah, they're coming out with an iPad, and then they announce some new Macs and go on about their business.
Yeah.
So what's the dimensions of this thing going to be? And I mean, I imagine it has to be between the size of an iPhone, of course, and the traditional iPad, and probably competing with the Nook and Amazon's Fire.
Yeah, the rumor is that it's going to be that class of a machine. It'll be filling in somewhere in that niche spot of the, the array
inch.
Of different devices that you can get. But yeah, it's supposed to be down there in that particular area. Rumor is it's going to be about $300. Rumor is it might have Wi-Fi and possibly cellular, but not necessarily.
Now, $300, that's cheaper.
Yeah, I've heard
the same price as the iTouch.
Right. So here's where it gets interesting, is because, you know, the new iPod Touch starts at $299.
Yes.
So how can Apple come out with this with an iPad Mini, which is actually rumored to have a 7.8-inch screen, a little larger than a Kindle Fire or a Nook, and price it at $299 or $249 or anything like that? I say no way.
Why not?
Well,
who's gonna pay $299 for a 5-inch screen, or actually, what is it, 4-inch screen, versus a screen twice the size for the same amount of money?
Why do you carry a laptop instead of carrying a desktop around in your hand all day?
that's a point well taken, but I'm saying in terms of public perception, to put these two devices side by side and say they're the same price, there's no way Apple's going to do that.
Okay.
I guarantee you, I'm going to go on record and say that the iPad Mini is going to start at $349 and maybe $399. Okay.
So now, let's put this in perspective, too, because it's rumored that it could start as low as $250 to $300, but it's only the 8 gig version.
And is 8 gigs going to be enough for most people? Yeah, that's a good teaser, but well, is anybody going to want the 8 gig, or are we going to want the 16 or the 34 gig?
Well, you know, what's interesting is that the new iPod Touch that came out last month, it doesn't even have an 8 gig version. So I'm not convinced that the iPad mini will start any less than 16 gigs. And again, you know, I think Apple... They can do this. They can get away with pricing this thing way higher than, say, a Kindle Fire at $199 or a Nook HD at $199 because it's an Apple. It's an Apple product.
No, not because it's an Apple. It's because it has the value that goes along with it and the features and everything that go along with it.
Yeah, but
it doesn't
have the subsidies that the Kindle would have, you know, with, you know, the books, you know, the promise of... putting all those books on there.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, the battle doesn't even exist anymore. You know, I've always said this, buy what you want. You know, if you don't want to spend $350 for an iPad, then don't buy it. Go buy yourself a Kindle.
Well, Cal, you and I talked about a year ago, just after Steve Jobs died, and Steve had said, we will never have an iPad mini. And one, you know, I mean, it's very unfortunate that he did die, but I said, now... Apple will be able to pull out the iPod mini, and you said they won't put out one like that. No,
are you sure
no
we
way.
Were talking about the mini and not talking about the iPhone being a larger screen?
No,
we were talking about a mid-size.
Don't endorse him.
And you said, but look, he's right just get what, you know, if you don't like the full size, then get something else. And I said, this is a good way to serve the market because there are a lot of people out there that really do want the iPad. But they want the size of the mini, and now it looks like they might be able to get one.
Yeah. You'd rather have the smaller.
I am actually in that camp. I mean, I've got my full-size iPad sitting right in front of me.
Yes.
But I do have a Kindle Fire HD, and you know, I've been using the smaller tablets around the house. I tend to gravitate more towards that 7-inch screen just because it's a little easier to, you know, be sitting on the couch with, to be reading in bed with, I like that form factor. Call me crazy.
I must just have big biscuit grabber hands because, you know, I go like, man, you know, this iPad is small enough.
Here, take a handful. You don't want Cal saying, take a handful. He does have ginormous hands, okay?
Yeah. Well, and we talk about it's a rumor. The one thing that isn't a rumor is that Apple sent out earlier today invitations to an event, an announcement event of some sort, on the 23rd,
right.
So on
a couple
Tuesday.
Days ago, actually, they said that.
Yes. Was it a couple days ago?
Yes.
So we know that something's going to be announced, and it's pretty well rumored that it's going to be the Mini.
iPad Mini, starting at $349, I guarantee it.
Good. Hey, you know, we should talk a little bit about the difference, because people will want to know that. We're going to come back after this break and do just that. Talk about the features and functions of the Mini and a whole bunch of other gadgets. Stay with us here on the Internet Advisor Show. Well, this is Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, Cal Carson, and Rick Broida, and we're talking gadgets. And guys, we were not sure why would anybody buy the iPad Mini if there's the Samsung Galaxy Tab 2, the Nexus by Google, Amazon Kindle Touch. Many of these are quad processors, and don't know, but it's highly likely that it'll only be a dual processor coming out of Apple. What do you think? Would people want to go to an Apple device instead of stay with the Android?
Well, I think we'll have to wait and see what happens on Tuesday as far as the specs go. But, you know, as we were just saying, I think the whole concept of dual-core versus quad-core processing in a tablet, especially a 7-inch tablet, which, as Cal very astutely mentioned, is really a device meant for consumption of data as opposed to creation of data.
Mm-hmm.
How important is a dual-core versus a quad-core? I think the concept of chasing after processor speed is a little antiquated these days, especially in a tablet. So it's tough to say. As far as who's going to want this device, everybody's going to want it. You know, it's a new tablet from Apple. You know, it's the first, you know, it's not new. I mean, it's still just an iPad, but it's a smaller iPad, and so it's
an iPad that's closer to the masses. I mean, they've sold a lot of iPads, yes, but I mean, this would be for the masses. This is for people who've always said, man, I'd love to have an iPad, but I don't want to spend that type of money for it.
Too expensive, right? This is going to be cheap.
Okay, what's the cost of a standard iPad?
It's not that it's too
iPad,
expensive,
Wi-Fi
it's
only.
Just priced out of their market.
Starts at $499.
Okay, so yeah, that'd be a good range. If it came out at $299,
and credit to Apple that they have kept that price point since the beginning, even though they've added more features and made it thinner and so forth. Right. But they have not budged below $499 for whatever is the current iPad model since the beginning. And it's amazing to me that they can still get away with that in the face of a $199 Kindle Fire, even if it's smaller, 10-inch Android tablets that are right. $299, $399. So that's why I think they can get away with a $349 or a $399 iPad mini.
You know, one other thing that they've really held true to is all the way through the different iPad releases is the 10-hour battery life.
Yeah.
Right? So they haven't gone to the higher pixel screen. Of course, they don't need to. It's a smaller screen. So they're not quite as the rumor is that they won't be any different pixel density than what the iPad 2 is. But can they hold the 10-hour, or is it going to drop to 8? You know, the Nexus by Google, most of the benchmarks are coming in at 8 because of the souped-up processor and bigger screen and better resolution and, a lot of things going on even in a small tablet. What do you think?
All those things that you're talking about, and when we were talking about processors and stuff like that, that stuff is only interesting to the geek. The average person is this. If I can look at a movie on my device, whether it's an iPad or a Nexus or whatever, and it's not jaggy, it's nice and smooth, and I can see it nice and clean. If I can play games and they're nice and clean and they're not jaggy, if you can do that with a dual-core processor, that's fine. If you have to use a quad, that's fine. But the average person doesn't even care what's in the engine behind it. They just like what's the presentation coming at them.
Yeah, but the battery life, right? They do care about that.
Well, they want all that, but can I do that all through my flight? You know, if I'm on the airplane for 5 hours, can I get through without a charger?
If you go to quad cores, you're not going to do that because it's going to chew up that battery. Mm.
You might be right there. That might be a good practice not to go to the quad core.
Yeah, and I don't, I have any Apple stock, and my God, I wish it did, but they just build a quality product, and that's the reason why they can charge the price for it.
The one thing that rumors were, folks, we're only talking about rumors. However, this is probably less of a rumor than a lot of the rumors that were around the iPhone 5 when it came out. There's a lot more known. A lot more people been on record saying they actually had one in their hand and played with it and whatnot. One thing that they have talked about is that it's the same black aluminum backing that the iPhone 5 has and the Gorilla Glass on the front. I love my iPhone 5, and I like the form factor. It's thinner, which this is rumored to be thinner. Is this going to look like an elongated iPhone 5, and is that okay?
Well, actually, I think one of the big rumors this week or the last week or two is that the iPad mini may have color backing like the new iPod Touch does, which would be kind of cool. That would be one way to distinguish it from the competition. And if you look at the new iPod Touch colors, it's pretty, pretty snazzy, and I'd love to see that in the iPad mini. I really think that there's a category for this size. I don't think it's going to look like an elongated iPhone any more than the iPhone looks like the iPhone. I think it's I'm excited to see it. I really am.
They've talked about the aluminum backing, and they did that for weight, and it's supposed to be a lot thinner and lighter, at least, again, rumor.
But it's having issues with resiliency.
That's what I was going to ask. What about it?
Well, they are. I've read articles that they are going back and looking at the material and reassessing it and looking to put a more resilient material on there. So they are working to fix that type of situation that's going on. But yeah, I mean, if it's not durable enough and it gets all banged up real fast, people will have a problem with that, and that'll be an issue.
Duct tape. That's all I gotta say. Duct tape.
Well, and if it is black, like I've been careful with my iPhone 5 not to let the back get scratched up. Now, when it was silver, if you scratched into the aluminum a little bit, who cared? Because it was same color, right? But you're going to see some scratches if it's the black anodized aluminum on the backing.
Yeah, you just get your can of Rust-Oleum and you're good to go, man. Spray and go.
Do you not carry yours in a case?
I don't. It just slides into my pocket that much easier.
And slides out.
And I put nothing else in that pocket, so it doesn't scratch up. Yeah. And I also, put the face down the Gorilla Glass. Maybe the Gorilla Glass is actually stronger than the anodized aluminum. But I've had no problem. I've always carried my phones that way. And that way you can hardly tell I have it in my pocket because it's even thinner now.
So what you're saying is that you have pants with a case built into it.
That must be it. Yes, my case is a little larger than everybody else's because it actually all fits the rest of my body, you know, or at least the rest of my body from waist down.
So. There is a brand called Body Glove.
believe me, with my body, nobody wants to see that. But what about some of the other rumors that are around? You know, screen resolution, we don't think that's going to be a problem, even though it doesn't quite compare to the new Androids, especially running Ice Cream, the new Android operating system. The Galaxy, Samsung Galaxy Tab 2, has gotten a lot of really good press. A lot of people like that tablet. Is Apple now going to give it a run for its money in the 7-inch category?
Don't even worry about run for their money. Here's the deal. In my opinion, out there in the market right now, there are many, many really cool, really neat products being put out by a bunch of different manufacturers. Whatever you can pay for, go and get. End of story. Because that's what the bottom line is. I mean, don't sit up there going, I really wish I could have this Galaxy and buy an Android. If you really want an Android, buy an Android. But you know, you just get what you want.
You're saying don't get hung up on things like screen resolution and whatnot because it's... Right.
Go up and look at the thing. Hold it in your hand. Does it feel good? Does this work well with me? Do I like this operating system? Is it doing the things I want it to do?
Well, yeah, but if someone is already has an iPhone and their mom or dad already have, you know, an iPad and the kids already have iTouches, they're going to stay with that platform and because that way they can use similar power connectors. They can share libraries, you know.
Well, then
they're already familiar with the apps they like.
Then there's a purpose for that, and that's the direction you should go. But if you're at that point right now where you're saying things like, well, if Apple would have just put this like the Galaxy would have put in theirs, then go buy the Galaxy. Don't try and force features into a product that you really don't want.
To your point, Gary, you know, there's the talk about the screen in particular. You know, when the new Kindle Fire came out, there was all this, you know, hubbub about the quality of the screen. The screen is so gorgeous. And then, you know, a week or two later, I think Barnes & Noble came out with their new version of the Nook tablet. And
again,
everyone was just going on and on about the screen. The screen's even better than the Kindles. And I think when you're looking at – you're talking about a device that's this size, a 7-inch tablet or a 4-inch phone, what have you. The screen resolution is such a minor point. As Cal says, you got to like the operating system. You got to like your apps. You got to like the platform. So don't get hung up on some of these specs. You just make yourself crazy.
You make a very good point. Hey, we're going to take a commercial break. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about where's Microsoft in the tablet market. Stay tuned. Well, this is Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, Cal Carson, and Rick Broida, and we've been talking about gadgets today, specifically the new iPad Mini that's rumored to be coming out, or at least being announced this week. And typically, Apple announces it 1 week, and the following week on Friday, at least that's been...
Roughly 10 days later.
Yeah, that's been about what they've done for the last number of releases of new product and whatnot. So,
so
we
for
think
all
that's
you nuts and maniacs, go out there and line up right now. Me, I wait till the next day when the line's gone and they still have the product and you just walk in and buy.
So there's so we've been talking about that, but there's another company that's re-entering, because they've had other tablets before, but re-entering the tablet market with a really interesting offering, and that's the Microsoft Surface. Now, there's two versions, Rick Broida. What do you think?
I think Microsoft has once again done a fantastic job of lining up some confusion for the customer. there's Windows 8. There's Windows 8 RT. There's Windows 8 Pro. There's Surface. I do this for a living. I'm confused by all these different options. I think Microsoft's got their work cut out for them. Now, that being said, the early buzz on the Surface tablet, which was announced earlier this week and made available for pre-order earlier this week, has been very positive. And Cal, you said yourself you saw a commercial that impressed you?
For the first time in a long time, I've actually saw a Microsoft commercial that made me go, hey, what's going on here? Well, because it was upbeat, it was young, it was fresh, it was exciting to watch. I was like, this is really different for Microsoft. And, you know, maybe someone finally said, hey, you know, Steve, Steve Ballmer, move over a little bit. Let's let some of the kids get in here and run this game a little bit. And I think it's going to pay off for them in that particular respect.
Yeah, I think you may be right. You know, what's interesting, and Rick, to your point, when you go to the Microsoft site and you go to Surface, there is a whole section that just says, help me choose. And
help me understand.
Yeah, it outlines Windows RT, which is in pre-order right now.
Right.
And supposedly they will be available on the 25th, so on Thursday they should be available. But the one that I'm really interested in, because it may be the first tablet that could really take the place of my laptop, so I don't have to take my laptop on the road. In fact, I don't even have to use it at all. That's the hope I have. That's the Windows 8 Pro, but it's coming soon. It's not going to be available right away. Do we have any idea when it might be?
I have not heard any specific dates on that, but I do know that, again, you're going to be looking at – I hate to keep talking about price all the time. I am the cheapskate after all, so that's kind of
my
thing.
And you write the Cheapskate blog
for that plug.
For CNET. So yes. CNET is a wonderful resource. So if you go to you go to our site, you can see Rick and then link off to the Cheapskate blog on CNET.
Well, where's our site at?
At our site? You're right. Where is it at?
It's at internetadvisor.net.
That's right, folks. And it's where it always is. You can find it same place, same time, every day you ever want to see it. And in fact, when we're not on the air, you're listening to us now on your favorite station around the Michigan Talk Network. But when you need to talk to us, you need to ask a question or whatnot, Ed, they can go to our site at any time.
They can go to our site and enter information or their questions to contact us, and we can email them back, or they can go into our discussion forums. And after this football season's over, we'll be back live on the air, of course.
And the other feature that you can get on the site that's really, really fabulous is that if you love the dulcet tones of Rick Broida, you can listen to him all over again by downloading one of our podcasts of our shows there as well.
You can get them from our site or from iTunes, so either one.
Okay. My tones are dulcet.
Yes, sir.
Well, you know, so tell me about this.
The whole thing about this Microsoft interface is they went with live tiles. And I'm not sure how that's going to swing with desktops and laptops. People are so used to having a blank desktop and arranging tiles. I mean, a tile is variable in size, but it's about, by default, about four or eight times the size of a standard icon or an applet that you typically see on a tablet device. So now you're going to have a live tile. It's going to display a lot of information. That's great, but I'm not sure if the paradigm shift, if people are going to accept that.
Well, you know, what's really strange is this is just a pure coincidence. This morning I had to reload AVG, which is an antivirus program that we sometimes endorse on this show, and it's free that you can use. I downloaded 2013, and guess what? Their interface looks like the tile interface from Microsoft Windows 8.
So this is a brand new, it's actually touch-oriented operating system that is ideally suited for tablets, but it could possibly go on a desktop or a laptop as well, right?
Well, and it will. That's what Windows 8
hope,
is, basically.
Right?
And actually, this week I had my first opportunity to really spend some quality time kicking the tires on Windows 8 on a laptop. And I have to tell you something. I did not enjoy the experience at all. It's to my thinking, it was completely unintuitive.
Right.
It was forcing me to relearn how to do things that Windows should not force a user to relearn.
So now, it's about relearning, but what if you don't, what if you're coming from a different environment? What if you're just brand new to computing? Would this be better than the old
Windows
interface?
Which planet are they coming from?
Well, I mean,
I'm thinking of somebody that's only one, now going to be two. They might like the tiles better.
Certainly, if this is what you grow up with, you may grow to like it. I just think that as a desktop operating system, that Windows 8 really has some serious usability issues. And this is the consensus. If you look around to the various news organizations, it's a very cool tablet operating system. But I think Microsoft has done a huge disservice in making this in trying to shoehorn that tablet. It's funny. Before they tried to shoehorn Windows as it existed into a tablet, that didn't work. Now they have this very nice tablet operating system
that's irony.
Into the desktop, and it doesn't work. And it's just, stupid if you'll
and for the technical community, you know, like ourselves that set this up and support users. I mean, when we got a hold of Windows 8, you know, previews, pre-betas even, and we looked at it and we're like, okay, where's the desktop? I want my start button back. Right. I want to go back in the control panel. I want to go into the registry. I want to go into the file system. Let me go into it, you know,
And it's rumored that, well...
Yeah, and you do have that ability, you know.
Windows 8 does have the ability to go back, use a mouse, right? The mouse is, what, it's was invented down in Palo Alto, the Research Institute, I think 63, and we're still using mice.
Right.
Who would have thought that? Is is a mouse really the best interface for a computer, or are we starting to get away from that? And will Windows 8 start to usher in the whole idea of touch, even on the Microsoft operating system? And with more and more voice commands, who cares, you know, even about touch, right?
Oh,
is this just an...
You know, you make it sound like, well, the mouse was in 63 and it's so archaic and stuff like that. Well, you know, electricity was invented back in the 1800s and we're still using it.
Yeah, but we got, you know, charging pads today. We don't have to plug in anymore.
Not commonplace, though.
It's a good point, though, about whether or not Windows 8 can usher in a more touchscreen-oriented desktop experience. And by desktop, I mean even a laptop or a desktop with a traditional monitor. I really cannot see myself sitting at a desk and instead of reaching for a mouse, reaching up to my screen.
Yeah, the ergonomics
of this.
Oh, the ergonomics for a touch screen is absolutely awful.
Yeah, I don't see that working.
But if it's sitting on my lap, if I'm reading a book or if I'm using a tablet, perfect.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
But if I have to reach horizontally, yeah, I'm going to have some repetitive injuries.
You know, it's interesting because I have gone to a couple places now where you kind of log in, it's still mouse oriented, and I want to go touch it because of my iPad.
That's
so I'm thinking, God, it's archaic to continue to use the mouse. But in some cases, you're right. I don't want to keep extending my hand way up to the monitor if, in fact, that's where we're going.
Well, I think what's going to actually happen, Gary, just to play off of what you were talking about with the mouse and that sort of thing, I think, yes, the mouse will go away. What it's going to be replaced with will probably either be your smartphone with the touchpad on it for you doing the things that you would normally do with a mouse to interface with another a machine or even the computer that you have in place of that type of situation.
I was going to say, you know, what I was really impressed with was probably, 4 years ago or 5 years ago, Nintendo came out with the Nintendo DS. It came out with two screens, okay? And I always envisioned future laptops will have two screens, and the bottom one would be a screen as well, like a keyboard. And they have ones like that, too.
Mm-hmm.
But it's completely programmable. So if I want a mouse pad, I could say I want it in the right-hand corner, and I want to be able to use that as my mouse pad. And so you'd have two screens, and you can either view your content on both, or you can have a virtual keyboard on it or a virtual touchpad. I mean, that would be ideal.
So now we're going to get a hold of a Surface and really try it out between all of us. But until then, I mean, you got to like at least a little bit of what Microsoft's done. Pre-order it for $499. That's a pretty decent price.
But you know what? That's not including the one particularly cool feature, and that's the cover with the integrated keyboard. That's $599.
Yeah, so it's another $100, but it's really cool, and even Foster can't destroy it because it's spill resistant. Hey, we're going to come back in a moment. We've got some folks here in studio that we're going to talk to. If you want to turn your HDTV into a smart TV, you're going to want to join us after the break. This is the Internet Advisor Show, and please stay with us through this commercial. Well, welcome back to the Internet Advisor Show. We have been talking about a lot of gadgets, and our best gadget man, Rick Broida, who comes and shares some of his knowledge with us once a month, usually, here on the Internet Advisor Show, but every week at the Cheapskate blog on CNET.com, so you can always get some of his great advice there as well. Rick turned us on to a couple of guys that have really invented something very cool. Rick?
Yeah, I'm very excited about this, actually. I got a press release a couple weeks ago from a PR person that I hear from quite regularly, and she told me about this product called the Smart Stick, and it comes from a company called Favi Entertainment that's based right here in Sterling Heights. And I said, well, hey, we got some local guys here. Local guys make good, and they're fellow Spartans, so you know they're cool. And so we decided to let them in and talk about the Smart Stick. And so I'll turn it over to you guys. Just tell us a little bit about this product and what it does and who it's for.
And so so we're going to be talking to Jeremy and Jeff Yackel. And Jeremy, you're the president.
Yes.
And your brother is the director of operations.
Yes.
Rick's right. Tell us a little bit about this.
Well, the Smart Stick is a simple solution to give any TV smart TV capabilities. You can download any apps, browse the internet, do basically anything you need to do for $50.
So you have a little device that you just plug into the HDTV port on the back of your television, and that's how you do this?
Right.
I mean, it's installation
exactly.
That easy?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's got an HDMI input right on the side of it. It's about the size of a thumb drive that you're typically used to seeing. Slide that into an available HDMI input, power it with USB, and select that input on your TV, and away you go.
So basically, it could turn your TV into a web TV that we used to have, you know, 10, 15 years ago, basically.
Exactly.
I mean, and that's just minimally what it can do. So you could surf the internet with it, I would imagine.
Right.
But you could also stream.
Right. So you have streaming, video streaming capabilities, music streaming capabilities, basic internet, full internet browsers. You could pull down a Chrome browser or the browser that's included,
mm-hmm.
all from the Google Play Store.
So it's basically a computer inside a USB stick. And
exactly.
With video input and output capability.
Exactly.
Remote control capability.
Exactly.
For $50, you're getting a smart TV.
I can't even buy a coffee maker for that
right,
much money.
Right.
That's incredible.
So you're basically delivering a full Android 4.0 experience accessible on your TV, correct?
Exactly.
Correct.
And you can, so for instance, games, things
yes.
like that?
You could pull down games. And then another exciting feature is that you can, through the USB input or the micro SD slot, you can access your home server. So if you have a DLNA system set up in your house, you can, or a Plex system set up in your house, you can access all of your content and bring it right to your TV.
So I can be sitting in my living room. Now, do I get a wireless keyboard and mouse? Because, I mean, if I'm sitting on my couch, I don't want to have the wire running
right,
all the
right.
way to the TV.
So included with the Smart Stick, you get a remote control.
Okay.
And if you want a full internet browsing experience where you're going to be able to type right in your hands,
mm-hmm.
you can opt into a wireless keyboard and mouse combo that's about the size of your hand.
Wait, so this thing supports Bluetooth?
RF.
Oh, RF. Okay, even better.
Oh,
okay,
yeah.
Perfect.
So if I have a wireless mouse or wireless keyboard, I could just plug that in the USB
right.
port.
Right, you could use your traditional keyboard, traditional mouse, wireless mouse, and plug
right.
it in.
Good.
I got to explore the story behind the story, okay? I'm looking at two guys, you know, good-looking guys. You know, they're probably in their mid-20s or something like that. They're normally out chasing girls and having a good time that you would normally do when you're in college. Your brothers, you're sitting at home, and who came up with the original for this idea, and what inspired you to go forward with it?
For years, we've been looking for a way to enhance some of our existing devices and some of the things that we've originated with. Projectors has been our mainstay for quite a few years now, this company, and we've been looking for ways to wirelessly enhance these devices, give them more capabilities. But instead of embedding and developing technology for each one of these devices that we make, we thought, you know, it would be great to confine our development efforts into a dongle or a stick or something to give these devices wireless capability and a little bit more brains. So
who is the brains behind this?
I don't know.
Pressure.
We both argue who's the brains behind the operation, but, you know, it's really a collaborative effort between the two of us.
So you guys weren't just sitting there, you know, having a beer on the couch and saying, hey,
yeah.
you know, we've got, you know, three big screen TVs here and they're all like got a million wires and stuff like that. Let's see if we can figure out a way to make this cleaner.
Yeah, we're just trying to make things simple, you know, make them more user friendly. You know, what do we want to use? And this is something that we would want to use.
You know, we're talking to Jeremy and Jeff Yackel from Five E Entertainment. You can get to the link from our site, internetadvisor.net. Go there. You can hear this podcast, as Cal is always reminding us. And then also you can link right off to your site. And do you take pre-orders? Do you order? They can order it right off your site, right?
Yes, you can. We're taking pre-orders right now. We should be shipping in a couple weeks here.
Excellent. Wow.
And this is just in time for Christmas, right?
Yes.
Oh, exactly. My gosh.
Perfect stuff.
Are you guys going to sweep house on this stuff?
Buy now and save.
This is great.
So I'm thinking of this in terms of comparing it to like a Roku box, for example. Mm-hmm. And the Roku starts at $49. It's one of my all-time favorite gadgets. But it's fairly single purpose in that it's letting you stream Netflix and Hulu and Pandora and things like that. I'm looking at your website and noticing some of the streaming media apps that are listed here, and they include Hulu Plus and Netflix and HBO Go and YouTube and Pandora and all these great apps and so forth. But so right out of the box, you're getting much the same functionality as you could get from a Roku, and then you're blowing way past that with games and just about any other Android app you might care to run. So
plus the whole internet experience.
Exactly. Right? So you're really basically offering a full Android tablet type experience on your TV, obviously without the benefit of touchscreen. But now you said maybe there's a way to control this from your tablet or from your phone that doesn't include the keyboard.
Right. You can definitely download a third party app such as the Google TV remote from the Play Store and control it that way.
That would work too.
Mm-hmm. It works great with that.
Oh my gosh!
Your iPhone or your Android phone can control the device.
Oh, this would be great. I definitely can see this as a stocking stuffer for Christmas. This is good timing. You're here local in Sterling Heights here in Michigan, but you probably ship this anywhere.
Yeah, we ship worldwide.
Yep,
absolutely.
Sounds great. We're talking to Jeremy and Jeff Yackel. They're from Favi Entertainment, and we're talking about a very, very cool way to turn any HDTV into a smart TV. Well,
that brings up an interesting question. Now that you've got this thing all put together and it's working for you, what's your vision for the future? What are you guys looking to go to next?
We're continuing to look out to develop a developer ecosystem around this product so we can get hardware solutions, software solutions all built around the smart stick.
And this is a really simple sort of device where I don't have to worry about learning a bunch of instructions. Pretty much plug and go.
Plug and play.
Sounds
very
great.
Very simple. That's the form factor of having it in a dongle makes it very user friendly and not intimidating for anyone to use. Really easy to set up.
And it doesn't matter what size television I'm using, whether I'm using your mirror 24 inch or a big whopping 80 inch LCD. Eh?
Nope, doesn't matter.
Now, does this store media on there if I wanted to? Because I see you have a 4 gig and an 8 gig versions of this. Can I store something on this?
Yes, you can.
Oh, excellent. So I could take it to grandma's and who doesn't have Wi-Fi, but she does have an HDTV TV. And show her. I could show her stuff.
You just throw it right on your keychain.
Oh, you mentioned a micro SD slot, so I assume that memory is expandable?
Yes.
Bingo.
Oh. Wow.
What a great device. All in time for Christmas. Jeff and Jeremy Yackel, thank you very much for coming and sharing your story and this great product idea for us and for our listening audience today. We are going to be back after the short break, and we're going to talk to a number of people that have emailed us all week about problems that they've had with their computer. When we're live, we'll take phone calls. When we're not, we're taking emails, and then we'll get them on the phone and talk them through some of the problems they've been having all week. So, Internet Advisor Show at internetadvisor.net.
You're listening to a podcast of WJR's Internet Advisor. Have a question? Post it in our discussion forums on our webpage at internetadvisor.net.
Well, welcome to the Internet Advisor Show. You're here with Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, and Cal Carson, and we're going to talk about a lot of different things. National Clean Up Your Desktop Day. We've got a few questions to answer, and Ed, you've got some interesting things that we're going to talk about this next hour, right?
Yep, and I'm saving them for next hour.
All right, and we're going to be back in a moment to answer some pressing questions. Well, this is Gary Baker with Ed Riddell and Cal Carson. We're here to talk to you about all things internet, and you guys... You know, I noticed that last Monday was National Clean Up Your Desktop Day. And, the way I noticed it was we got a press release from Hefty. When you think of cleaning up, I think of Hefty because they make trash bags to put stuff in. And they've got an app that actually will help you clean up your desktop. You can put their desktop stuff in.
Isn't that what the recycle bin's for?
That's what I thought. I don't know. Do we need a hefty liner maybe on that recycle bin? Is there...
You know, it's a great idea because how many people's computers do I walk up to on a daily basis? And I wonder how could people operate that way where every square inch is filled up with files and folders on their desktop? I mean, a lot of people even store links on their desktop. So you have favorites on their desktop. You have documents that have been out there for a year for that presentation that you were supposed to give, and you copied it to your desktop. And, I mean, it's a great idea.
And not organized, right?
So you're saying that they actually offered a application?
I guess. I didn't download it. I could have, I guess. Cal, did you?
And Ed, I have to ask you, I'm compelled. I must do this. Why should you keep your desktop clean?
It's a virtual. Yeah, it doesn't. It's not like it's hurting anyone.
Actually, it does hurt something.
It hurts your battery. Startup time.
It hurts the operating system, period, because, and this happens both on Windows and on Macs as well.
Really?
The more icons you have on your desktop, the slower your machine will run because it has to redraw and keep track of every one of those icons all the time.
Yep.
But are we really talking about a lot of time and effort?
Well, it does substantially slow down Windows startup time. So, it could slow it down by 2 or 3 seconds.
And there's a real easy.
That's a lot.
And it's a real easy way of fixing it too.
How do you do that?
Take all the crap on your desktop, right? You make a folder called Clean Up Desktop, and you take all those icons that you don't use on a regular basis, roll them into that one folder.
Yep.
And then that way, now instead of keeping track of 35 things, it only has to keep track of 2 things or whatever number of things are on desktop. Anytime you need to get to those things that you had on your desktop, you want to see real quick. Open the folder and you're there.
Right. I always thought that's what the directory structure was for content, and then, you know, your start menu and all programs for your programs. Do we need desktop icons?
Well, not with Windows 8. You're not going to have them because you have live tiles, right?
Right.
So, I mean, pretty soon we'll have to ask people to clean up your tiles, not your desktop. That's interesting. You know, but one time I was working with someone.
Tiles?
Huh?
Do you have to grout those tiles?
No. I wonder. You just thought of the next application for Windows 8 called Grout.
We should make Grout.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, don't tell anybody. Let's develop a product around that. Okay, shh. Don't tell anybody about
Grout.
That. So, I mean, we're talking about clean. Go ahead.
I was going to say, at one time I ran across a person that had 2 screens. You know, like you could dual monitor your screen.
Uh-huh.
And one of them, and it was a laptop. Well, they wanted to get to the documents that were off of the screen. They couldn't do it anymore because it was on the right-hand screen, as an example. So they were working in laptop mode,
right?
And so even if we reduced the screen resolution all the way down or making it as small as possible, they still could not get to that document. So we had to navigate to a folder called Windows Desktop, or we had to do, like Kel said, create a single folder and then drop all the icons on the left-hand side of the screen, drop them in the folder, then rearrange the desktop so that, you know, all the new icons would be reshuffled and they could find that presentation they were missing.
Well, the other way to cheat around that is just to change your resolution on your screen to extend it to just single, and it just crowds them all on one screen.
Well, we tried that. It wasn't enough.
Wow.
Yeah. So
that's a lot of icons.
So I like Desktop Cleanup Day, Gary. Thanks for bringing that up.
Well, so now this is desktop, right? And I only keep a very few icons on my desktop for that reason, right?
An organized person mind would, right.
And I keep everything else, you know, very logically oriented in other places, in my directory folder.
I'm not showing him my desktop.
Yeah. but we're not talking about our computers, right? Because a lot of times people contact us and said, oop, I was trying to clean up and I uninstalled this or I deleted that and I deleted something I shouldn't have.
Yes.
How do I get it back? So we're not really saying if you have an application you haven't used in a long time, it's not in your startup folder, it's just on your hard drive somewhere. Do we have to clean that up to make the machine run faster? Does that impact the operating system in any way?
Not usually.
Okay.
Usually, you know, if it has a taskbar item, yes. So if there's a taskbar icon for an antivirus program that you're not using anymore, or even a printer, right, Cal?
Yes.
You have old printers,
now,
notorious
just,
for slowing down a computer.
Yep. Now, I could just take and delete the icon, though. I don't need to uninstall the program.
No, if you have an old printer. For printers, yes, I would understand.
Yeah, printers
myself.
You do.
Yeah.
But for applications,
no.
I don't have to.
It depends on whether the application is loading that applet down into the system tray. If it does that
That's
every
right.
time it starts up and you're not using that program anymore and don't have a need for it, then get rid of it.
Like AOL. Mm-hmm. If you had AOL.
True.
And that's shipped with your computer, and it has that AOL icon. But I no longer, I haven't used AOL in 2 years. You know?
Yeah, most people haven't. That's the problem that for AOL.
But. And speaking of AOL, did not mean to do this, but I didn't realize this. AOL is offering a new service called Alto. And, oh my gosh, Cal, you brought in an AOL 9 CD?
Hermetically sealed for your protection.
Yeah, it's not even opened. And how many hours do we get free? And that was, what, for, what, 12 years ago?
Oh, here, 14 here it years goes. Ago? You get 1,099 hours free for 50 days. No credit card required.
And so what year do you think that is?
God, I couldn't even possibly tell you.
Yeah.
1999,
circa, I don't know.
Yep.
You know, we used to make Christmas tree ornaments out of all those CDs that we used to get in the mail.
You know, actually, that's a great idea. Hey, we're going to take a commercial break. We're going to come back, and we've got some other interesting things to talk about. Nomophobia. I wonder what that is. We're a fear of something. Back after this. You're right. You're back with Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, and Cal Carson today. Foster does have the day off, but he'll be back with us next week. And Ed, AOL, you said that they're now doing something innovative. It's been a while since we've heard innovative things out of AOL.
Well, they're trying. They're trying to do something. They think maybe they've found a niche with this internet web cloud-based stuff. And what they're trying to do is AOL. You don't even need an AOL address for this. AOL is offering a product called Alto, A-L-T-O, and so it'd be altomail.com. What I discovered is you have to have at least Internet Explorer 9 to get to it, so it's HTML5
oriented.
Right. Yep. Okay, and it's going to look a lot like sort of Windows 8. It'll accept up to 5 email accounts, web-based, cloud-based mail organization. So the email clients that it support are the ones you'd expect, Google, Yahoo, Apple, so Mac or dot Mac, mm-hmm. so at, or at Mac.com, and me.com. So, and what's the, oh, and Yahoo, did I say Yahoo, Google? Yep. So,
well, and there's a lot of companies that are starting to give you kind of cloud-based storage and cloud-based drives, like Microsoft's coming out with SkyDrive,
mm-hmm.
and Google has theirs, the iCloud from Apple. Dropbox was one of the first to do this, and Box and a couple others like that. And now AOL, maybe?
AOL's trying to do it, but they're trying to come to it and provide a web-based experience where the user can drag and drop and create multiple folders and like photos and pictures and organize all their emails. They can organize them by where they received them, or they lets the user customize them. I really haven't seen anything on this. I just discovered it this morning.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try to do a little more reading, maybe try to sign up for an account, see how it works, and try to report on it. But, you know, being AOL, and we all know what AOL was really good at, and that was marketing and flooding my mailbox with tons of advertisements I didn't want.
Right.
And I suspect, I mean, I really hope that's not the case here. I mean, they really want their name out there. They have to do something, and I hope that they'll be, at least for the near future, be sparing on advertisements.
So, you know, I've been really happy with SkyDrive.
Yes.
Have you guys used anything else? I've used Dropbox in the past. I've downloaded a couple others and just to try them out. But those are the two that I primarily used. Obviously, the iCloud
Apple. I am just spoiled with Dropbox. Dropbox does everything I ever wanted to do in a cloud-based storage type situation. It works really, really seamlessly on all my devices, whether I'm on Windows, whether I'm on Mac, whether I'm on an iPad, whether I'm on an iPhone. It's just smooth as silk.
And you can get extra space. First of all, it's free for the first 5 gig.
Yes.
And then if you sign me up, if you like send me a link and say, hey, you got to try this, and I try it, and I download and start using Dropbox, you get some more. And 5 gig takes a long time to fill up, but you get, you know, another couple gig every time.
Yeah. The only thing that I have to warn people, or at least let me rephrase that. I'm not going to say warn. This is what I do. I use the cloud-based drive services for moving a file quickly that maybe I forgot to take with me and didn't have a thumb drive with me. I use it for mostly for fun data movement or photos and music.
Mm-hmm.
But for as far as a backup tool, I still think external hard drives are better for that. I think online backup services that are dedicated to backing up your device are better for that than using something like a free cloud-based service.
So now I do the same thing, Cal. I take and I have, an external drive. I don't always get it off-site at my home to my parents' home as often as I should probably. But I do that. But I am finding that I'm relying on, especially iCloud, it was so easy to just, I take a photo, it automatically photo streams to my other devices. I take and very easily take and move some files and whatnot. I'm starting to rely more and more on Microsoft and Apple and some of the other big companies. They're going to be a lot better at backing up my stuff than I am.
Right, right. Well, Google also has one out there.
And Google's
Google Drive, I think it's called, or Google something Drive. Like that.
Well, see, I don't call that backup. And I'll tell you the reason why. The difference is you say, okay, they're going to be better at backing it up. How much data are you actually going to be putting out there? That makes a big difference between the two, because backup is something that you're doing. Oh, I'm putting a picture up today. I'm putting up a document tomorrow. I'm doing this and that. But when you have a disaster and you have to do something called restore, mm-hmm. and you want it all to come back at the same time, oh, that's too hard, because now everything has to come down that pipe and it could literally take days.
Well, the one thing use it for is sharing files with professionals. So email systems typically won't handle 80 megabyte files if I try sending it to you.
Right.
Like this podcast is going to end up being around, 150 megabyte. And we have to then upload that and massage it. So after the show, I have to upload it to Foster, who is on vacation, and I'll take it and I'll put it on Foster's Dropbox. So he has created a Dropbox account for me so that I have access to a specific folder, and him and I can exchange data. I don't have access to his other colleagues that he shares data with.
But this is different. What you're doing is what I call file movement.
Right, right. File mm-hmm. movement.
Backup.
Like FTP and stuff like
yes,
that.
Yes, right. But backup is for disaster recovery. It's for getting back something you lost on the original medium. And that's a different game entirely.
It is. I'm just talking about, we got this cloud-based storage, and there's many facets. You can use it for, backup. You can use it for exchanging files like traditional FTP was. And then you can also use it for syncing of data, commonplace for your notebook, tablets, desktops, work, and home to access the same data. So at the end of the day, I don't have to lug my laptop anymore. I can go review that document on my iPad at home because I'm using iCloud.
You know where it really saved me some time?
Where's that?
When I upgraded from my iPhone 4S and I went to the iPhone 5. It's been months since I've gone to iTunes because I don't download music there. I guess I have gone to it, but not on my phone. But I haven't synced with my iTunes account hardly at all, and not in months. When I plugged in the new iPhone 5, I said, go out, get all my stuff off of iCloud, and put it on the phone. And everything came down, with the exception of there were a couple sites that I had to actually put my password into again that had been saved on my old phone. Everything else was just like my old phone.
And that's good.
And that was wonderful. That saved me so much time.
That is good, and that works really great until you get that letter in your email box that day that says, hi, we're Joe Blow Cloud Storage, and we're closing up. You got 30 days to get your stuff back. And it's happened before where services are shutting down, they went out of business or whatever it is, and you've got to get that stuff back. And if you don't pull it down within that amount of time, and everybody and their mother is pulling at the same time, so the servers are stressing and that sort of thing. No, if it's something that's just fun junk that I have, I just go like, oh, what the heck? If I don't get it pulled down, I'm not going to worry about it.
Yeah, but you're thinking about backup.
But true backup? No, that doesn't go up there.
Yeah. And I don't use, I'll use Apple. I'll use SkyDrive from Microsoft. Google, not going to go out of business here in the short term. If ever.
Microsoft, you know, we're not sure.
Microsoft, I think, with this new Surface, and I know people haven't are having a hard time getting their arms around Windows 8, the new operating system. I think they'll figure it out, and I think Microsoft has a good future.
Eventually, but, it'll surface.
Cute, very cute. But you,
don't hold your breath.
So what if somebody did want to use cloud-based storage? Because there are a lot of companies that big companies use for cloud-based storage. You wouldn't recommend it for consumers?
I wouldn't recommend it for backup.
Okay.
There's a difference between backup and storage.
Okay.
And so as long as you understand the difference between the two, then, yeah, all those ones, all the big-name ones out there are great for storing stuff at. That's terrific for doing that. Mm-hmm. But for true backup, you have to get into your Carbonites, you have to get into your Moseys, you have to get into your crash plans. Those are the actual backup services if you want to do it on the internet.
Yeah, so the price might be right, but you got to be careful of the company's financial health as well, right?
Yeah, you get what you pay for.
Yep. We're going to be back after this commercial break to talk more internet stuff. Well, thank you for downloading the podcast and listening to it, or if you're listening to us on one of our affiliate stations around the Michigan Talk Network, we appreciate you tuning in to us today.
You know, I was just last week we drove out to Grand Rapids. My daughter's at Grand Valley. And mm-hmm. while I was out there, we actually turned to, was it WJRW?
Okay.
Out in Grand Rapids.
Grand Rapids, yes, one of our affiliates. Yep. So you heard us talking.
No, I did not. I was at the wrong time, but I did listen to the station.
Well, wonderful. And we appreciate people that do listen to the station, and especially when we're on, of course. But we always support our affiliates around, again, the Michigan Talk Network. Which is where we're syndicated. We have a caller that called in. When we're normally on live, people can call in at the time. But when we're not on live and on our flagship station on WJR on Saturday afternoons, we take and ask people to call in. Or ask people to actually send us
an email
through our site at internetadvisor.net, and then we ask them to call in during the time that we are going to be taping. And we actually have Fred from Livonia who called in to ask us a question here on the Internet Advisor Show. Fred, thank you for doing that. Welcome to the Internet
Hello.
Advisor. Hi, Fred.
Hi. Yes, I want to thank you for calling for a friend, but I have a new problem on my own computer.
Okay.
I'm using a Vista operating
thank
system
you.
On a Dell, and in the past couple of days, I'm getting a pop-up window just as I get the desktop page to show up, and it says, you are attempting to open a file of type application.dll, and of course it says, the files are used by operating system by various programs. Editing or modifying could damage it. Do you still want to open it? And I've been hitting cancel, but if I do hit open with, will it identify what it's trying to open?
So you're actually not trying to edit
right.
the DLL,
yeah.
which is a bad idea to edit that, right?
Right, right.
Right.
I would never do that again.
Right.
Yeah. Why is this? Window
but,
keep popping up also.
It's well, popping it's, up on its own. It's,
well, because I'm curious. I'd like to find out what it is. But if it's only been happening for the last few days, then I would just do a system restore to a couple days ago.
Oh, okay.
And that might take care of the problem. But I'm curious about that. So sometimes if there's an application that's failed, or then that can happen. Or if you were infected with a malicious program or a virus or a Trojan.
That's what I'm afraid of.
Right. So a system restore might take care of that as well. So
okay.
you might want to download Malwarebytes, and which is we have a link on the internetadvisor.net website. Malwarebytes
right.
will scan your computer. What I'd recommend, I'd go back, do a system restore to 5 days ago, a week ago, and then download Malwarebytes afterwards. Hopefully that'll then take care of you, that pop-up error that you're getting. Another thing you can do is obviously, there's a program starting up every time you start up your computer. So I would go into a program that we use called msconfig. And you do that by selecting start, run, and then you can go into you type in the run line, msconfig, FIG, MS Config.
Config. Yep.
It's one of those hidden utilities Microsoft doesn't tell us about. And when it comes up on the far right-hand tab, the last tab is called Startup. So on the Startup tab, we'll list all of the applications, not the services, but the startup applications that you have the ability to stop pretty easily. And it's they're presented in a manner where you have checkboxes to enable or disable them. Now, you may have to click around and drag titles around, but, you know, that's why this is a last-ditch effort. You might be able to identify what they are, like an antivirus program or, you know, a program. You know.
So the dot DLL, that extension on that file, is Dynamic Link Library, and those really aren't meant to be accessed by the user, but they're used
by other programs.
By the programs, right?
And what it is, a library, so if you had an error message for a program that came up, why have every program write that exact same error message, which basically says file not found or something like that? Windows has these libraries, so all the program has to do is call such and such a library and present that error message to you. But it also does a whole bunch of other things, like how do I sort folders? Or, you know, when I do file open, every application you use in Windows uses the same file open dialog box, so that they all look the same. And those are stored in the Dynamic Link Libraries, and they're called by programs like Excel or you know, web browsers.
Little utilities, little sub-programs.
Yeah, that's all they are, sub-programs.
By the way, I did click on Open With, and I see the file name of WPBT0.dll. That's the one it's trying to open. And then on the bottom of this Windows thing, it says, use the web service to find the correct program or another click thing. Select a program from the list of installed programs.
What was the name of that file again, please?
Okay, WPBT0.dll.
So that's William Paul David Tango?
Yes, zero.
Yeah. So now let me ask this. Because it's possible that this was caused by some other program that, for whatever reason, had a problem. Either maybe you uninstalled it. Do you know of anything else that happened around the time that this started popping up a couple of days ago?
No, everything was just to read email and, you know, look at a few web pages.
Okay.
So
it's a Trojan.
Is it?
Yeah, okay.
So it's the remnants of a Trojan. So this can sometimes happen. So. It's the remnants of a Trojan.
Okay.
Yes.
It still may be live, or the Trojan still may be live, and this file's been removed. But you might want to download Malwarebytes, or what I prefer to do is go back in time 5 or 7 days,
right.
Download Malwarebytes, scan, and hopefully that'll be removed at that point.
Go ahead.
Should I do a restore first and then install Malwarebytes?
Yes.
Yes,
because what would happen if you installed it and then you went back? It doesn't take and do anything with your data, but it will take and restore your programs back to 7 days ago.
Right.
So you just have to install it again.
Okay.
So go back.
That's a good idea.
Now, what kind of antivirus or anti-malware programs do you have already?
Well, actually, McAfee.
Okay.
Is the one but we haven't technically renewed it, so it's probably not running anymore.
Yeah. So what I would do is do a system restore, download Malwarebytes, get rid of this thing, and hopefully that startup error goes away. And then I would download Microsoft Security Essentials, which works great on Windows 7 and Vista.
Mm-hmm.
And it's free from Microsoft. We have a link on it on our website at internetadvisor.net. It's called Microsoft Security Essentials. It's in the toolkit.
Okay.
On the website. Or you can go to Microsoft and just, when you're on Microsoft's website, just search for Security Essentials.
Right.
Okay.
So you got
it. Very good.
And don't forget to uninstall Malwarebytes, you know,
After
it's installed, because you don't want two antivirus programs running at the same time. So after Security Essentials is installed, go into Control Panel under Programs and Features and uninstall the old McAfee that you have that's outdated and not renewed.
Yeah,
right.
But he could leave Malwarebytes on his computer, but just uninstall.
Turn it off.
uninstall the McAfee,
right,
because
McAfee,
the McAfee, yeah, and Microsoft Security Essentials are basically the same type of program. They're both,
yes,
antivirus programs, and you really only want one.
Right.
Okay.
And Malwarebytes is on demand. It's usually not running in the background.
Right. So you can leave Malwarebytes,
right,
there.
And you can also, okay, find the link for Malwarebytes on the InternetAdvisor.net under Toolkit, and that's under the malware protection or anti-spyware.
Yes. So. Excellent. Thank you very much.
Well, I'm glad you found that file name. Otherwise,
we'd be guessing. Yep. And this way, we looked it up and found out that it really is a remnant. Now, what happened is McAfee, yes, if it's not running, it didn't catch this, and you have the Trojan. In the event that sometimes something like this might happen, is if it will remove almost all of it, but leave this DLL or leave something else.
Oh,
so that could have happened as well. In this case, because you didn't have an active antivirus, our guess is that you really have the virus. You did catch
it.
Yes.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
Fred, we appreciate you calling us. That helped us help a lot of other people, so thank you very much.
Great. Thank you.
You take
care. Tigers.
Go Tigers.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
So, Cal, he needs to back up.
Yes, he does.
Okay. Go ahead.
Well, if he has a Windows machine, what would I use? Well, don't they have a Microsoft backup already built into the operating system?
Yeah.
So, yeah, what he needs is an external hard drive, USB 2.0 or better. I don't even think you can buy anything that's slower than 2 anyway. And then just put it on there, format it, and back up the entire computer using Microsoft backup, and that'll keep them safe.
A lot of these external drives you purchase also come with backup software.
That's
if you
true.
Get the Western Digital or the Seagates,
right, yes,
you could buy them with that intention.
And they're a lot cheaper now because the plants over in Taiwan are up and running again. They had been flooded out, but now we're seeing a dramatic drop in
That's
prices.
Why they were so wet when, yeah, I got it in the mail.
Stay tuned. After this, we'll be back. Well, this is Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, and Cal Carson. Foster has the week off, but he'll be back next week to engage again here on the Internet Advisor Show.
You know, something just dawned on me.
What's that?
Every time Foster goes on vacation, he usually does something to test technology. I wonder what it's going to be this time.
That's right. You know,
breaks technology.
He breaks it. That, when he says test, he meant, yes,
spill
something on his keyboard, you know, go swimming with his cell phone. That was one.
I can't wait to find out what's going to be this time, you know?
You know, I was looking at the new Surface by Microsoft, and that's a very, very flat membrane-oriented keyboard that's part of the cover. I mean, it's literally in the cover. And it's spill-resistant. I'm thinking, if Foster gets this, he's going to have to come up with some other way to ruin
you
a
know
computer.
What? It's gonna, yeah, it may be spill-resistant, but some of the people that I work with and their nails, I bet you over a couple months, they'll probably wear a hole in the side of it because of their fingernails.
Yeah, so we don't know what material this is going to be made of, but that could be a problem, right?
Yeah. So I'm sure they tested it.
Yeah, but, you know, you never know, right?
You never know.
Never know. You know, it's interesting because I've been paying a little attention to a new phobia that somebody must have come up with, but I actually think it's real, and that's nomophobia. You guys ever heard of nomophobia?
Only until you said it to me last week is the first time I heard about
it. Yeah, so it's the fear of having no mobile device with you. And when you think about it, nomophobia, have you guys ever experienced that where you forgot your cell phone at home and had to go back and get it?
Gee, you know, I thought, you know, when you said that, you know, I was remembering that a long time ago, there was an old guy in our neighborhood, and he wasn't scared of anything. He goes like, I got nomophobia. But anyway.
I think this is a little different. You know,
they talk about
60% of the population. Now, whose study is this? I don't know, you know, but that's what I'm reading. Maybe 60% of us have some form or some flavor to varying degrees of nomophobia, fear of no mobile.
We've been at work, and me and Ed have talked about this before. You know, and I know, and when you say this, I just noticed this. I remember this with my daughter. And it's like girls and the darn cell phone, man. It's like, you know, if you take that away from them, they like almost stop breathing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, you
where
know,
is
I'm
it?
Like,
I gotta
come
have
on.
It.
You got to be kidding. It's just, well, they're crazy about
there's
it.
There's one worse. When you take away their bedroom door.
Really?
Yeah.
They like that door.
They like that door. Yeah, one time I actually removed the door on my daughter's bedroom.
So something else, Ed, you may experience, because both of us take scouts out into the woods where in Boy Scouts they're not allowed to have electronic devices, at least not in our troop. How about in yours?
No, we allowed that last year.
No, you did.
Yeah,
okay.
Because of weather warnings and stuff like that. Because last year, not this past summer, but the summer beforehand, we actually had a tornado go through Lost Lake.
Oh, really?
And we couldn't get a hold of some of the boys. And that we had very poor coverage in the area, and we couldn't. And there was seven different shelters they could have took place in. So just they keep it away or they keep it in their tent. But, you know, we just don't have it out and about when you're doing activities.
Well, you know, it's interesting because the boys, you know, it's like, okay, I'll give it up. But then they go out and have fun and they don't even think about it because they can't deal with it anyway. They can't use it anyway because it was taken away. And, right. And they're out running around the woods. Even last week when we were out in the rain, because
well, that's the thing
weekend.
With scouts. You know, are they going to damage the devices? Because boys will be boys.
Yeah.
Well, is there? I mean, Gary, you're fairly high up in the corporate world. Do you ever feel naked if you ever forget your phone?
Well, as the CIO for the Society for Manufacturing Engineers, you know, I need a way for people to get a hold of me.
Right. Constant contact.
It doesn't happen very often, but if something's down, if we have an emergency or something, I do need to be in contact.
And tell you,
how do you feel if you forget that phone? Do you panic or do you just go like, well, you know, I don't have it. And when I go back and get it, I'll be okay.
So I'll actually leave it in one room of the house occasionally. And go to another room in the house, but that's only occasionally. Almost always, it's in my pocket.
Right. Well,
the only time not is I'll leave it in the dressing room out at the lake when I go swimming. I don't take it swimming.
Is it right by your bed when you're sleeping?
No, I do leave it across the room.
Okay. So you take that chance.
So they do have to wake me up, yeah.
No. I've had my either a pager or cell phone next to my bed for 15 years at least.
At least.
I'm required.
You are. In your job, you're required, just like mine,
yeah.
Right?
I'd be called from people from halfway around the world, and they require tech support, and that's what I'm paid to provide.
Yep.
Now, but, you know, it's gone to a step further. Now we have applications on their phone, and people are – it's not this nomophobia of afraid of not being in contact. There are people that want to Twitter or they want to view their Facebook – or they are girls,
right.
Especially. They're in constant conversations. They eventually grow out of it as they get a little older. But, you know, it happens in the elevators at work. You can't even carry on a conversation with people on the elevator because as soon as everyone steps in, they reach for their holster, they grab their phone because they don't want to make eye contact with you. Yeah. They don't want to start a conversation. Cal will let you know, I'll talk to the wall. You know,
oh, yeah.
I'll start a sticking conversation up with anyone.
Yes, you will. That's great.
You've seen me.
Yes,
it'll amaze me just watching people walk around, and they'll always have the phone in their hand. They won't even take the phone and put it in their pocket or their purse.
I've seen that
They're
too.
Constantly carrying that thing. It's like, come
so
on.
So maybe this phobia is
it's
real.
It's detachment. And if that person didn't have it, it's like a nervous habit. All of a sudden, they realize they're holding up their hand. There's nothing in there anymore.
Yeah.
Wow.
You know, going back to the Boy Scout analogy or example, when we took the Boy Scouts snow skiing last winter,
mm-hmm.
You know, again, they're required to turn in their phones. As soon as they get out of the car, it was a long drive, so we let them have their iPods and whatnot to listen to music on the way up, although most of them didn't because there's always conversation going on. But they had to turn in their phones when we got there. And there was, we have this little lodge, and part of it, the one side is the Boy Scouts, and the other side they rent to another group. And it was interesting because there were a number of people in this other group, I think it was a church group, that were on their iPhones and iPads and other, their Android devices, sitting next to each other, not talking to each other, but tweeting or texting with somebody
yep.
else. And our scouts said, boy, are we glad we don't have ours with us because we'd be doing that. And this is and they recognized that.
That's amazing.
It was a really good thing.
Well,
both of you guys are affiliated with the scouts and I'm not. Why do you take those devices from them when in the normal world those devices are always there?
Yeah, because we want them to talk to each other.
Oh.
Yeah, see?
And also, we don't want to have to deal with mom and dad when they, you know, smack the kid, or, you know, hey, why'd you break your phone? And I don't want to go through that grief, you know. Because, you know, what do you mean you were running, you know, when you went sledding down the hill and your iPhone popped out, you know?
Oh, it's only $600, right?
Yeah. Do you have insurance on that?
So I guess this thing is real. So we'll track it. I got an email from this one group, and they were talking about it, and they said upwards from 13% a few years ago, now up to about 2/3 of the population in some form or another suffer from nomophobia. So yep. We'll track it.
You know something? Just for fun, we should probably do a weekend without, just to see how well you can get along without it.
Boy, it would be nice. Yep. It would be nice.
I mean, even just forward all your calls to a landline instead.
So that might that we will take that under advisement. But the one thing we don't want you to do is to go a whole week without the Internet Advisor. You can listen to us on your favorite radio station, or go to internetadvisor.net throughout the week. If you have a question, send us an email, get on our discussion forums, and we'll try to help you out. There's a whole bunch of people besides Ed and Cal, myself, and Foster that will be there to help you all week. We will be back next week on your favorite station. And Foster will be here. I'll be out. Cal and Ed, you're both going to be here. That's a nod.
Yes, absolutely. Sir.
Okay, great. And Annie and Rich behind the glass, thank you very much for your help here on the Internet Advisor Show.
You've been listening to a podcast of the second hour of WJR's Internet Advisor. To hear previous podcasts, visit our webpage at internetadvisor.net.